All right, I'm here today with Dr. Serene. We'll be discussing Crohn's disease. So, Dr. Serene, in my mind, Crohn's disease has always been confusing, as it's a chronic, relapsing, inflammatory process with many manifestations that really can occur anywhere in the GI tract. And then while there is all of this heterogeneity, what I found most helpful is to try to categorize these patients upon where their disease is located, and then as well, what is their predominant disease manifestation. What are your thoughts on approaching a Crohn's patient and as far as this organizational method?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The disease can be a little challenging to think through because we have paradigms for cancer, for example. We looked at local disease, local, regional, and distance. And unless you have sort of a global sense of where Crohn's ends up, it becomes difficult to tease these things out. You know, during our conversation, I'll try to show you how I approach it, and it may not be the approach that everyone uses, but I think it's very valid to think of Crohn's in terms of the pattern of involvement. As we were talking before this, about 80% of patients with Crohn's tend to have small bowel involvement, of which one third only have ileitis exclusively. About 50% of patients have both ileum and colon involvement, and of those, you think of 20% of total patients just have Crohn's colitis. And then one third of Crohn's patients have perianal disease, with 5% of overall Crohn's patients showing up only with perianal disease. So in general, there are three patterns that you need to know. One is this small bowel, predominantly ileal pattern of Crohn's disease. The second is primarily colon involvement with perhaps some small bowel involvement. And the third is perianal disease, which can complicate some of these other patterns. Everything else, as far as duodenal, oral involvement, esophageal, tends to be rare. So those are the patterns. And then while it is, you know, informative to know about stricturing and fistulizing disease, in my mind, that is less of an issue than where the disease is, because they tend to all, if you have fistulas, over time they can cause obstructions. And similarly, if you have stricturing disease, you know, over time, it ends up, you know, causing similar, it can also cause diarrhea and things like that. So the exact pattern doesn't, of the pathological entity, whether it's stricturing or fistulizing, doesn't change management so much. It's more important to note where the disease is, and of course, you know, what sort of symptoms they're causing.
Very good. And Crohn's disease really is both a medical and a surgical disease. And
how do patients show up in your mind when when patients come with Crohn's to you? Mm-hmm.
So they can have a number of symptoms with abdominal pain. They can have change in bowel habits with diarrhea or as well with constipation. They can also be malnourished in addition to that when you're actually evaluating them on exam. And I think normally what ends up happening are the medical doctors and GI doctors are the initial physicians to evaluate them. And really the initially medical therapies are instituted before we get involved.
Yeah, and again, if you try to think of it globally as to what all the manifestations of Crohn's are, it gets very confusing very fast, right? But if you try to think of it in terms of patterns of disease, it's actually quite simple. So when you have small bowel or ileitis involvement, you're going to get malnutrition, you're going to get diarrhea, and you're going to get obstructive symptoms. And that's going to be your prominent features. When you get colon and rectal involvement, you're going to get diarrhea, and you're going to get bleeding from your bottom, maybe some abdominal pain as your predominant symptoms. But if you have Crohn's colitis, you shouldn't be seeing a lot of nutritional issues because that's not the main feature. And of course, with perianal disease, whether it's with ileal disease or with colon disease, with perianal disease, you get fistulas, you get diarrhea, but primarily perianal pain, fissuring, and fistulization. So those are the characteristic manifestations. And then as far as medical management is concerned, there are whole host of drugs, sort of in classes, antibiotics, steroids, you know, immunological agents, anti-metabolic agents, etc. And they tend to be these groups of increasingly sort of dangerous medications, if you will. And the approaches that the GI doctors use to determine how best to treat these patients are very well described as essentially two categories. One is a step-up approach where you start with the lowest sort of agent that will keep the disease in check, and then you work your way up. And the other is to go top-down approach, which is that you start with biologicals and more involved agents very early in the course of the disease, even before sometimes they ever need steroids, and then you slowly wean down. And those are the two approaches. It's unclear, there's never been a head-to-head on those two approaches, but they're physicians who feel very strongly on both sides of that argument. And so when you see patients, they would have gone either one way or the other way.
And then, in regards to these various medical therapies, when we do get involved from a surgical perspective, what kinds of things do we need to worry about with these medicines that have been used?
Yeah, so from a surgical standpoint, the first you have to make a decision about whether the patient needs surgery. So what I would say is that at the back of your mind, whenever you see a Crohn's patient, the thing to keep in mind is that you cannot cure Crohn's surgically, right? Unlike ulcerative colitis, where you can take the colon rectum out and they're done, you cannot cure Crohn's. And when you cannot cure Crohn's, what you're trying to achieve with Crohn's is essentially improvement in quality of life. And that should be your driving factor to decide whether surgery is indicated or not. So the way to deal with it is to figure out what it is that is bothering the patient most, and then figure out what that will entail to improve the quality of life. So for example, if a patient has ileal disease and they come to you and they are sent to you to take care of the ileal disease, but in speaking to the patient, you find out that they actually have a lot of perianal fistulas and that's what's driving them crazy, then it may not be enough to do an ileal resection. It may not be the right thing to do an ileal resection. You may just need to take them and put some setons in. You may need to do a colostomy, or you may need to take care of the ileal disease along with a colostomy or something like that. But the point is, you need to understand what it is that is driving their morbidity and shoot for that. As far as taking something simple, like for example, if they have ileal disease and you're planning an operation where you're going to resect that segment, you first have to make a decision whether you want to resect that segment or not, whether surgery is indicated. And the way I approach it is that you want to intervene on Crohn's where medications will not work. So, for example, if they have developed a stricture where there is no inflammation or very little inflammation, but purely scarring, then that's a surgical indication. But if they have a lot of medical or they just have a lot of inflammation in the area, then you push back and you ask them to get more medical therapy before the scarring sort of becomes the last thing that is residual. And the way to differentiate that often is to look for pre-stenotic dilation of the small bowel. Because if you have chronic scar for a long period of time, the small bowel proximal to that area will get dilated. Whereas if you have just inflammation that comes on and off, but when there's no inflammation in that area, the area allows stuff to pass through it, then you will not get pre-stenotic dilation. So that's one way to tell. But your decision should be made based on when you want to be operating on a Crohn's patient, you want to see residual effect of scar from prior Crohn's inflammation. But you do not, if at all possible, want to see active inflammation. To go back to your point on what you worry about, it's sort of the same things you worry about in any patient. Nutritionally, they tend to be, poor, and you can try to optimize them with TPN, but as you know, TPN often is not enough to do that. Steroids, you worry about a lot. There is some concern with biologicals and stuff as far as surgical healing is concerned. But the truth of the matter is that active Crohn's itself is so much worse than having them on biologicals that I rather take a patient whose Crohn's is well controlled on biologicals and operate on them than take someone who's not on biologicals but still has some active inflammation from Crohn's. And so that's my thinking. In terms of steroids, If they are on like 5 mL or something, 10 mL, maybe you can consider an anastomosis. But when they start reaching 15 and 20, then you should be talking to them about a diversion right off the bat.
Are there any other factors that you consider preoperatively for optimization of patients beyond medical therapy for their Crohn's?
Yes, absolutely. So you can optimize their nutrition. Of course, medical therapy is very important. If they're smoking, that's a big red flag. Smoking is associated with, of course, poor outcomes from surgery, but also incredibly fast recurrence of Crohn's and the anastomosis. And so you need to get them to quit smoking. Patients who are less than 40 years of age, who have perianal disease, who continue to smoke, and for some reason, those who have low education levels all have relatively poor prognosis compared to other patients.
And we've started touching on actual technical considerations in the OR. Are there other factors beyond thinking about the amount of steroids they're on for anastomosis? Do you ever think of do you staple versus hand sewn for anastomosis? So what are your thoughts on some technical factors?
So again, technical factors. Again, it's nice to break Crohn's down into these patterns, right? So if you look at terminal ileal Crohn's and you're trying to deal with that, you're going to do a resection and you're doing an anastomosis. Most people would suggest doing a site-to-site anastomosis. It has been shown to have a slightly decreased risk of symptomatic recurrence, and the feeling is not because the recurrence occurs slower in those patients, but because a site-to-site anastomosis tends to have a longer lumen. And so because the recurrence will occur at the lumen, you will tend to have more time before they become symptomatic. So typically a staple site-to-site or a hand-sewn site-to-site is what people tend to do rather than an end-to-end hand-sewn. That's for ileal Crohn's, and that's a technical consideration for that. For Crohn's colitis, one of the things to keep in mind is that there have been head-to-head comparisons between a segmental colectomy versus a total colectomy for someone who has, you know, only one-sided Crohn's, for example. And in general, the feeling is that it's better to do a total colectomy rather than a segmental colectomy in those patients, because if you just do a segmental colectomy, the chance that they will develop Crohn's in the other colon segment is high. Of course, these have to be taken on an individual basis. If a patient has already had a large amount of small bowel resected and they have a small area of the colon that's involved, it may be better to leave the rest of the colon in. But in general, a total colectomy compared to a segmental is preferred. And then if you look at the third pattern, which is perianal disease, in these patients you are looking at setons, 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 and then diversion rather than any kind of healing or any kind of procedure to close fistulas. Even under the best of circumstances, when the inflammation is completely under control, the success rate of fistula closure in patients with Crohn's ranges from 20 to 40%.
And then we've talked about actually removing segments of bowel. What about in the setting of small bowel stricture, the use of a strictureplasty?
Yeah, so it's strictureplasty is a very good modality to use when you have a short segment stricture. It tends to work much better. There's been a move away from it, partly because we've had more drugs for Crohn's, so the patients who do proceed on to surgery beyond medical management tend to have much more extensive disease where strictureplasty is not a good option. Or we have a lot more endoluminal therapies now where people can be dilated, and those endoluminal therapies work for short strictures as well. And so often these patients that we see are not no longer amenable to a strictureplasty. But in select patients, if you have multiple short segment strictures, for example, it may be better to do strictureplasty in some of them than to resect a large segment of bowel. The simplest strictureplasty that you can do would be similar to a pyloroplasty, where you do a Heinicke-Michelinx procedure, you divide it longitudinally, or you incise it longitudinally along the length of the stricture, and then close it hand sewn in a transverse fashion. And that's the most simplest kind. There are also others described like Jabali's strictureplasty and a much more extensive isoperistaltic long segment structuroplasties, but these are very rarely used because of the use of biologicals. Essentially, you end up using these kind of techniques only in patients who have had Crohn's for a very long period of time. They're running out of options, and you cannot resect any more bowel, otherwise they'll end up with severe shortcut.
Well, very good. I look forward to our upcoming conference and a further discussion of cases. Thank you, Dr.
Excellent.
Strain.
Thank you, Greg.